which is titled Progressive Answers to the Crisis. And I have the pleasure to welcome Mr. James Galbraith. He joins us. He was yesterday, I think, in Edinburgh. Tomorrow he's in Berlin. And today he had this time slot to join us here in Brussels, which we are very happy about that. Welcome, James Galbraith. James Galbraith is professor at the University of Texas in Austin. Yes, and he's a well-known figure in the and one of the most outspoken Keynesian economists of the United States, but it's not really necessary to mention that here. Most of you know Mr. James Galbraith. James, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. And as you mentioned, I have come to Brussels, actually after visiting Italy, Greece, Spain, and Portugal, as well as France, the UK, and even for good measure, Croatia, briefly. I'm going on to Germany tomorrow. So I perhaps have had special preparation over the last few weeks for saying a few words on the theme of this conference, Achieving Europe. It's a very great ambition. But I'm tempted to ask, with all due respect, frankly, what are you talking about? Europe, as you know it and believe in it, is not very far from the breaking point. With the current institutions and policies, the direction is clear, and the time is not very long. And so, if I may say so, let me suggest that the issue is not how to achieve Europe, but how to save it. In Greece, just a few days ago, while I was there, the government shut down the public radio and television system on 6 hours' notice without discussion in cabinet or in the parliament. It did so in part because it had failed just in the immediate previous days to complete the sale of the gas monopoly to Gazprom in a desperate effort to raise $800 million in cash, 800 million euro in cash. Why did Gazprom not complete the deal? Because their analysis of the Greek economy held that they could not be assured of the revenue stream from a population whose income was declining so fast. What better, clearer indication of how close that country is to the brink of economic failure can you expect to find? Leaving aside the visible evidence on the streets of Athens, the elderly people prowling through the trash bins looking for food, or the miles of storefronts that are now vacant except for a great effusion of pawn shops. The Greek people, moreover, correctly saw that the actions against ERT, flawed though that institution is and was, they saw them as an attack through the austerity program on the foundations of a modern democracy. Again, when the target of austerity is the one existing national forum for public political discourse, a forum that cannot be replaced by commercial channels, will not be replaced by them. How much closer do you want to be to the brink? In Cyprus, already admittedly a small and exceptional case, the economy has failed. The Cypriot euro is no longer the same thing as the euro everywhere else. It's in the eurozone, but it's subject to capital controls. And an economy with a strong element of cooperatives is being transformed for the time being into an economy based on barter. Greece, as I say, is failing fast. In Portugal, the signs of stress are less clear, but it's not far behind. I haven't been to Ireland on this trip. And after that, there are larger countries. The peculiar drama, it seems to me, in Europe is that although economies that are in imminent danger of failing are only a small part of the European whole, even of the Eurozone, it is nevertheless true that if the first substantial one, namely Greece, fails, there will be neither a moral case nor a practical economic possibility of saving the rest. Europe is whole. It has to survive as a whole, or it will fall apart. It cannot cut off a foot and expect the rest of the body to go forward unimpaired. There are historical parallels here. Yugoslavia collapsed with the departure of just one republic initially, Slovenia, and the USSR following the departure of the Baltics, a very small piece of the whole. Once this process gets going, the centrifugal forces tend to grow very quickly. What is required at this point? It seems to me that the most fundamental thing is a change of ideas. This crisis has been going on in the world economy for 5 years now. 5 years is a very long time. It is longer than the period, for example, between the collapse of the stock market in October 1929 and the election of Franklin Roosevelt in his inauguration in March of 1933. It's longer than the American participation in the Second World War. And those 5 years have been 5 years of disappointment, of forecasts that constantly say that in 6 months' time, economic growth will resume. This is a habit of a certain type of economist, the European Commission, as well as in the United States, the same habit. And when those forecasts are disappointed, as they always are, they are simply repeated with a new time horizon, so that recovery will occur in full 5 years from now, whatever your starting point may be. A reasonable skepticism of a rational individual should cause us to re-examine the premises behind this argument. And a realistic recognition would follow that a new approach is needed now, immediately, beginning tomorrow, next week at the latest. Not grand and far-off schemes for an architecture to be put in place over a long period of time, but action, the minimum necessary action to stabilize the situation. The patient is in the emergency room now. The first thing you do is stabilize him or her, and you operate after that if you can manage it. Stabilize, stabilize, stabilize. The purpose of a stabilization strategy is to buy time. This is very important. Once things are stabilized, then it becomes possible to consider the larger agenda, to conduct the campaign of ideas that would be required to realize the ideals that you were speaking of in the earlier session. The patient will be lost, however, if one proceeds to that without first solving or dealing with the immediate problems. What is required? In my view, what are the minimum necessary steps? A proposal has been in circulation for some time, authored by two committed Europeans, and on the next version of it, I will be a co-author. They are Stuart Holland, many of you know, a distinguished participant in the creation of Europe, and Yanis Varoufakis, a Greek economist very much on the front lines of what is happening in his country and in Europe as a whole. It's called the Modest Proposal. It is a modest proposal because it is designed to operate within the framework of existing European treaties and charters, or to stretch them as little as possible to achieve the minimum necessary results. What are the elements of the modest proposal? I will just go over them very briefly. The first is to deal with the failure of the credit markets and the unpayable debts. Debts that cannot be paid will not be paid. Very straightforward proposition. Losses on those debts relative to their face commitments have already occurred. The important thing now is to transform the instruments into a stream of payments that is plausibly sustainable over time. And the framework in the modest proposal suggests mutualizing all of the debts of the first 60% of GDP in the Eurozone so as to put that debt on a payable low interest basis and to make the rest of it manageable over time. So that's the debt crisis. The second thing is the banking crisis. Banking crisis is a very complex affair, which begins with the fact that there are insolvent banks, banks in danger of insolvency, extends to the fact that there are banks, that banks as a whole are too large a part of our economy and too powerful and too tied up with the politics of nation states. And this is true not only in Europe, certainly also true in North America. In fact, it's more true in the United States than any place else in the world, so far as I know. But it cannot be the case that banks are larger than governments and more powerful. What needs to be done? We suggest that the proposition of a banking union, while desirable, has become another step too far, bridge too far, something that, if it comes into being, will not come into being quickly enough. And that the appropriate intermediate measure is for European authorities to take over banks on a case-by-case basis, beginning with Greece, where the local political situation essentially is handing over the banking structure to local oligarchs. Much better to have competent bankers from elsewhere in Europe running that system. Let them take care of resolving and reorganizing the banking system. Third point, so that's the banking crisis. The third point is the investment crisis. The fact that not nearly enough is being done to build a viable and sustainable European economy and to provide jobs. The resources exist in the European Investment Bank, the European Investment Fund. They are blocked by certain requirements related to matching funds, but they could be unblocked. Get something going. That's the investment crisis. And then there's those elements are familiar. They've been part of this proposal for a long time. The fourth element is going to be the new element. And it may require some additional legislation, I'm not sure. But it seems to me to be indispensable and to draw on the historical experience, among other things, of the United States, confronted in the 1930s with a similarly grave threat to the national existence. This is the social crisis, the human crisis. And a social crisis is dealt with by collective action. It's dealt with by insurance, social insurance. Deposit insurance to protect people's bank savings. Unemployment insurance to provide a floor under the incomes of those who cannot find work. Food assistance to deal with the most severe cases of hunger, and they exist, as well as to fight the extremism which is emerging in Greece with a neo-Nazi party, which is operating with food as a political weapon. This has to be dealt with. Pension assistance to assure that the elderly who are already out of the labor force and vulnerable do not slip off into desperate poverty. And all of these things should be thought of not only in the social context, but also in the macroeconomic context. The macroeconomic context for this is very simple. You have a deficiency of total demand, which contributes dramatically to the deficiency of total employment. It's very difficult to offset that entirely through existing structures of government, particularly where they are deeply stressed by the crisis, where the institutions have been privatized, have been sold off, or the civil servants have been sacked, and in any event, people are traumatized. The way around that is to go directly to individuals and let them have the incomes which they will spend that will then support their local economies in place, providing employment in place to people who are already there. That strikes me as the way to do this. And when you've stabilized the situation in that way, then tax revenues will become a little more stable, public institutions will become a little more viable, and the whole system will perhaps become a little bit more manageable. This is also, again, to wrap up on the theme of the previous panel, an appropriate way to consider how to reverse the massive drift toward rising inequality, which has occurred on this continent for two reasons. One of them has been the triumph of neoliberal dogma, a triumph which surely has been discredited by recent events and should have been. And the other is the fact that Europe itself integrated many countries that were internally quite equal with other countries at very different levels of income. And so the process of integration has introduced a new element of continental inequality that was always there, but wasn't important because the economies were separated, and now they're not, and it is. And so, again, thinking about logically how one goes about building a system consistent with your vision and your ideals, your aspirations, and with the practical necessity of meeting this crisis and surviving, it seems to me that this is a simple, practical, administrable way to go. Thanks very much for your time and attention. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, James Galbraith.